One is identified with the food one eats. One is identified with the whole universe. When we are one with the whole universe, we are one with the food we eat. This comes from the Vimalakirti scripture. The whole universe and a meal are identical in quality. If the whole universe is the Dharma, then food is also the Dharma. If the universe is truth, then food is truth. If the whole universe is Buddha, then food is Buddha also. All are equal in all their aspects. If the universe is seen to be the realm of the spirit, there is nothing outside the realm of the spirit. If it is seen to be truth, then there is nothing other than truth. If it is seen to be the equal essence, then there is only essence. There is no difference between the whole universe and the truth when they are seen within this wisdom eye, for the very manifestation of truth is the above-mentioned equalness. We are therefore the personification of the universe when we eat. This is a fact that only the Buddhas fully understand, and the universe is the personification of truth. When we eat, the universe is the whole truth in its appearance, nature, substance, force, activity, cause, effect, relatedness, consequence, and individuality. The truth manifests itself when we eat, and when eating, we can realize the manifestation of truth. The correct mind when eating has been transmitted from one Buddha to another and creates ecstasy of both body and mind. And I think this ecstasy here means the peace of body and mind. I was thinking about my relationship to food, and it has varied from time to time. And I remember before I became a monk, when I was feeling really low and confused, I'd go get two specific things. It was Doritos, nacho chips, I think it was, and a huge bag of M&Ms. And I would eat these two things, and they would sort of cheer me up. So food was used, I used food as something to kind of cheer me up and make me feel better. At times, food, and in thinking about this talk, what kept coming up is food being a distraction. And I've seen food as a comfort. Or food can be seen as something to titillate the senses. But the real use of food and the real meaning of the mealtime ceremony is somehow what's being said there, which I'm not quite clear exactly what it is or even how to explain it. But it's food is a nourishment of the body. Just as sex has become really blown out of proportion in our society and not seen as just a normal function, like I think River Master G used to say, just like going to the bathroom. Food, I think, also has been blown way out of proportion to what it is and seen in all these different things. See, it's something we really like, something we enjoy, something we want. It can stir up a lot of greed, just as anything else can stir up greed. And yet, when we truly meditate, it's part of the whole flow of things. It's part of the Buddha nature, and it's not separate from us. It's something that is given to us, so as the mealtime ceremony says, so that we will not become lean and die. And I know for myself, besides those times, there have also been times, for instance, last summer when I went to the Chan retreat. Do all of you know what the Chan retreat is? River Master Daizui has been giving a retreat each summer for the last few summers One retreat is for monks, and one retreat is for lay people. Is it just lay ministers, or it's just for lay ministers at this time? And it's a week-long retreat, and it's just, I think, eight people go each time. And I went last year for the first time. And during that retreat, we eat very simply. And what River Master Daizui said was that when some of the monks have gone very deeply into meditation, or some very deep experiences taking place, that the type of foods that they want are very simple, things that have very few ingredients. So the way we cooked, when we took turns cooking, the way we cooked when we were out at the Hermitage was, I think you could only have three ingredients in each meal. Have some of the lay ministers been there? Not yet, no. Okay. Are you? You're going this summer? Well, I'm giving it a little bit away.
Yeah, right.
And because it was found that this is what people want when they're very deeply in meditation, he thought that if we ate that, it would help us with our meditation. And I found it really helpful because during that retreat, there was really no craving for food. There was no, I enjoyed it. But I didn't, it was just, I think it was just as it should be. It was prepared for us with the mind of meditation. We ate it in stillness. And it was just another opportunity I found just to be still. And it was just something to nourish the body and the spirit, because it was good, wholesome food, and it really tasted quite good. And I found that I stayed on another week and did a private retreat out there. When I came back, my whole relationship to food had changed. It didn't have the kind of importance that it used to have. You know, when I'd see, oh, this is being served, oh, great. And you know how people talk about, oh, when can we have brownies and when can we have pizza and all this kind of thing. It just didn't mean anything to me. It was just, food was just, I think, in its proper place. And it wasn't a distraction for me. It wasn't a greed. Now, that was a very blessed time. I have noticed that the old ways come back from time to time, but it still doesn't have the same kind of distracting quality and greed quality that it used to. I can still get into that, but it's just not the same. And Reverend Master Jiyu talks about this in a lecture she gave on benevolence, that the stage in her meditation that she had reached at that point was that food was just nourishment. It was nourishment for the body and the spirit, and it wasn't kind of, as she said, to titillate the senses. And I think that is, you know, that is the use of food. We do enjoy our food here. We get good, nourishing food. We get lots of treats. Sometimes we get more treats than... We get a lot of treats, and that there's nothing wrong with that. But there, you can enjoy treats and you can enjoy food, but there's a different attitude of mind when it is done out of greed and when it is just done out of acceptance of what is being offered, and as a nourishment to the body. And, you know, treats can be a real nourishment to the spirit. I have found that, you know, at times I really feel like a need for something sweet. After we've worked really hard or there's been a big retreat, we very often have a big treat. And it seems like it's almost needed to kind of help the spirit and kind of replenish something. And so there's nothing wrong with that. But I have used it as kind of an avoidance of the koan at times. When maybe I'm feeling sad or lonely, gee, a piece of chocolate would would be nice at this point. Or I found sometimes when I'm meditating and something is coming up that's difficult to look at, the thought will come up, oh, you have that piece of chocolate in the drawer. And I'll get up and quit meditating and go eat the chocolate. And I think, oh, that's fine, you know, that's a good thing to do. But was it? So, I've never thought of food before until I was preparing this talk as it actually being a distraction. And if you think about it, when we meditate and do this practice, we need to learn to sit with whatever arises, to really be with ourselves, to not avoid ourselves. And in doing that, we can know the unborn. It's in sitting with ourselves at every moment that we come to know the unborn. And in fact, we had a spiritual examination ceremony this morning, and one of the monks asked, she's still really having difficulty sitting with suffering. And what came up for me was what I have found recently happens with myself, is that there's this painful thing that wants to arise, or a fear, or something that I usually would kind of cringe at and try and find some way of avoiding it. But if I just sit with it, and I'm willing to sit with it, very often it just goes. And then what's underneath it is some sort of offering from the eternal. Sometimes there's a warmth, sometimes there's a stillness, and then it may come back again, some more of the suffering or another aspect of the suffering. But I'm finding that if I am willing to sit with the suffering, that I am shown something else. Not every time and not immediately, but that we can actually sit with the suffering. And what came up for me when she was asking this question was not that we have to learn to accept suffering and go through our lives, accept the misery of our lives, but that when we truly accept something, it ceases to be suffering. Now, this is a broad statement, but I have found that that is true for myself recently, that if you can truly accept what is being offered to you, then suffering can be let go of. So if we are looking to food as something to distract us, something to enjoy, something to almost take refuge in, it's kind of avoiding just being with ourselves. It's avoiding when we take refuge in anything besides our Buddha nature, we're kind of closing ourselves off just a little bit. And in thinking about this talk, this morning when I've noticed for myself that when I say the five thoughts before an informal meal, I just say them. I don't listen to them. I just say them and then I eat. And this morning, because I've been thinking about this, I really tried to just listen to them when I said them, and then to be still while I ate the food, instead of having my mind racing around thinking about what I was going to do next and all this other stuff. I didn't succeed real well this morning, but I was trying at least. Then I noticed I had been rushing around all morning. When I got to lunch, I wasn't even thinking about that. I just took the food, I said the five thoughts quickly, and I ate. And then I thought, oh, this is a bit different than this morning. But within the mealtime ceremony, whether it's the shortened form, the five thoughts, or the whole mealtime ceremony, is an opportunity to know, to understand more about the whole practice. Besides it being something that we can learn to meditate with, well, let me start with that at first. In all of daily life, we are trying to learn how to be mindful, which means that in whatever we're doing, we are just there, doing the best we can, letting thoughts come and go. Sometimes, if we've had a hectic day, we haven't done this that well. So we get to the meal. This is really an opportunity to, it's like an opportunity to meditate again, so that you can just be still, just be there. When your mind tries to distract you with all kinds of things, just bring it back. When the greed arises, gee, I want to get the biggest piece of cheesecake. I hope it's still left when it gets down here. you just sit with that. There's no problem with greed arising, as there is no problem with any thoughts arising. But we let them come, and we let them go, and we can just sit with the greed. I know that I have sometimes had this happen, with, especially with cheesecake. And the disappointment when you're served, let's say you're being served, and you're served a very small piece, and somebody next to you is served a huge piece. And you're amazed sometimes at the feelings that arise when that happens, the sadness, and also when we have donuts passed, and you know there's two maple bars, and I really want a maple bar, and you're kind of hoping, oh please, nobody take the maple bar before it comes to me. And I know when I do these things, I feel really awful afterwards. And besides not being able to enjoy the food because I'm so anxious about it, you feel really crummy when you give in to greed. And this is the same for any greed arises during the day. It's no different with food or with other things that we want. We can just sit with them. And greed can seem so demanding. Like when greed arises, it's almost like we have to have this thing. And it's just, it's not real. And I have an example of this, which I think I gave at another class, and some of you might remember it, but before we had this very compassionate phone watch system that we have now, we had one that was very, very difficult. And there would be a sign up for a 9-day phone watch, which was a very painful phone watch because it meant you couldn't rest, and there were certain times that weren't so bad, like first thing in the morning when you're working anyway, and then times in the afternoon when you want to be resting. And sometimes when I would hear that the phone watch sign-up sheet had been put up, I'd just rush up there so I could get one of the good slots. And I remember it was just before tea, and someone told me that they saw the phone watch list had been put up there, and there was incredible greed and anxiety. I've got to have my slot. You know, I've got to have a good slot. And it was just, I'm sure you've all experienced greed. It's a common thing to all of us, where it's this demanding thing, and it's all anxious, and I've got to get my way. And I said, no, this time I'm just going to sit with it. And I allowed that greed to sit there, and it left. And there was just such a peaceful feeling. Like, so what? I'll sign up tomorrow, and whatever's there, I will sign up for. And there's that, and then there's the kind of crummy kind of feeling when we give in to greed. And I think it's knowing that we have what we need already, and that we don't have to have anything else. And it's also a trusting that we will get what we need. Again, an example from myself is on brunch days, the monks prepare their own brunches. And a number of years ago, so you have, within about a half an hour, everybody comes at different times. And sometimes it's very crowded, and sometimes there's only a few people there. And I remember waiting sometimes when there were a lot of people there, and the anxiety of when would I get to prepare my brunch? And I'd been waiting there, and then someone else would offer someone else their frying pan. But I'm here, and will I ever be able to fix my lunch, my brunch? And I kept wondering about this. Why is there this anxiety? There's all that food. It doesn't really matter if I wait a few minutes. And I think it had some karmic, based in some old karma. I'm not sure what, and I didn't try and figure it out. But it seemed like maybe I had inherited some karma of someone who had been starving, and there really was this anxiety, that if you didn't get to the food quickly, there wouldn't be any. So I tried to just sit with it. You know, allow the anxiety to be there, allow the greed to be there, and just wait. And so all these things that seem so demanding are just not real. They can come from old karma or just from the self wanting to get what it wants. So as you can see, your dealing with food can be just a whole, just another aspect of your training, just as anything else is. And the mealtime ceremony helps us with this. One of the important things about the mealtime ceremony and the way food is served here is to accept whatever is offered. That this is what the Buddha did and monks who would go out begging would do. They would hold out their begging bowl and whatever was offered they would accept. So at a meal here at the Abbey, you don't know what's going to be served. It may be something you like. It may be something you don't like. This is a real help to just accepting what is being offered and to letting go of the discriminatory mind, that when something is served that you don't like and the mind goes, oh, yuck, or gee, or something, the mind will create something. You just sit with it and you let it go. When it's something you really like and you're feeling all this greed arising and all this saliva pouring, well, I don't know if we go that far here, but you know what I mean. You just sit with that. And it's really a way to learn about our practice, is just as the food is coming down the line, is being passed, just accepting whatever is being offered, letting your thoughts come and go, letting your likes and dislikes come and go, letting your greed come and go, and being aware, showing respect for the food. As in everything we do, when we are aware and mindful, we can show respect to whatever we're working with, to the hammer, to the knife, to the food we're preparing. We can see it for what it is, which is the body of the Buddha, as are all things. And we can do the same with the food. And this is the way the food needs to be prepared. The cook, the chief cook, has a very difficult job because he or she must prepare food without greed. And it's not that greed won't arise, but the person must look at the food with a non-discriminatory mind. And this is talked about in the Tenzo Kyokan, that you must view chocolate cream pie with the same mind that you, well, let's put it the other way, a stalk of a wilting cabbage with the same mind as chocolate cream pie, if you like chocolate cream pie. It's all what's being offered to us. It's all should be seen with the same gratitude. We can take that wilting cabbage and take off the outer leaves respectfully and prepare it. And we can accept the chocolate cream pie, perhaps without taking the biggest piece. The other night we were served, actually we were served chocolate cream pie, and there was banana cream pie and coconut cream pie and berry pie, and we had a choice. And I felt my greed arise, and I started thinking, what would be the best? What would I really like the best? And I took the coconut cream pie, and I felt kind of crummy. And that's what made me think about it, because I was giving into my greed. And sometimes it's just in a very subtle way that we are discriminating. And I saw someone else doing this, you know, really, which one should I take? You know, which one would be the best? Gosh, is that the biggest piece? And I just feel really crummy afterwards, because it's, in a sense, it's turning a little bit away from the Buddha mind, the mind that is just sitting still. And it hurts us just a little bit. And so I, for myself, I'm going to make more of an effort to just take what I need at a meal. Not to take, you know, a huge portion of something that's going to make me feel like I've eaten too much just because I love it. But I'm going to try harder to just take what I need and to try and let go of the discriminatory mind. Because there's something that's so much better than food. It's finding our true nature. And I find when I give in to greed, when I give in to overeating, I know that I've turned away just a little bit. And I don't want to do that. So this class, preparing for this class, has really helped me take a look at my relationship to food again. And I think it's when I'm having more of a difficult time with my training, you know, when I'm hitting a rough patch, that I turn to food more, and that I distract myself with food more. Then when I came back, for instance, last year from a 2-week retreat, and I just viewed food as something to nourish the body. So, the mealtime ceremony. The five thoughts are what we recite at informal meals. And I think if people are doing mealtime ceremonies when they're not at the monastery, they probably just recite the five thoughts. And I thought I'd read something from a lecture of Reverend Master Jiyu's that I just happened to be looking at because it's going to be in The Roar of the Tigress. And I noticed, something about the mealtime ceremony that I'm just about to do a lecture on. So I thought I'd read what she wrote about benevolence, which is one of the five, is it five or four? Five wisdoms that a bodhisattva has?
Four.
Okay, thank you. My brain is not so good anymore. Okay. There we go. Benevolence is perhaps one of the most difficult of these four wisdoms to understand, for everything in nature is at all times helping beings, yet man is usually unaware of that fact. The trees are helping us, the flowers help us, not just by their beauty and their shade, but by what they do to the air. Our children and our animals are helping us. What are we doing in return? The trees have given us wood upon which to sit. We've just taken them. We haven't thought that the tree lost its life to give it. As you get deeper and deeper into benevolence, you begin to look at a cabbage and realize the acceptance of the thing, which is to be willing to be sacrificed so we can continue to live. Then you start looking at why the scriptures for lunch and supper and the like are the way they are. We must think deeply of the ways and means by which this food has come. We must consider our merit when accepting it. Have we really truly realized what we are doing? We are killing things so that we may stay alive. So what are we doing? What are we giving in return? What are we actually offering? Or are we just taking? Are we just greedy? We accept what we eat so we won't become lean and die. That's the reason we eat. I don't think I'll read. This is about chopping off frogs' legs. We eat so that we will not become lean and die, and we eat also so that we may become enlightened. We accept this food so that we may become enlightened. The five thoughts at mealtime, which actually give us the whole of the meaning of benevolence, the purpose there, the making of offerings. Everything is offering itself to us. What are we doing? When we start thinking that way, we start making the offering of benevolence to other things. Make your life have a purpose, then everything will offer itself to you with joy, and you will make your offering with joy. The whole universe will blaze up in joy. I have felt it do it, and it's exquisite. But don't be surprised if then your body is happy with the same meal every day of the week because it knows the purpose of the meal, that you eat solely for the food value and the good of your health. And yes, the taste buds won't be satisfied as they were before. What's even funnier is that they don't want to be because the purpose for eating is now clear. Actually, why don't I go through the formal meal, because the five thoughts are at the end of that, and we can just go over that at the time. We start off. One other thing about the formal meal. We don't have them that often as monks. We had them twice a day, breakfast and lunch for a while, and now we're having them at lunch. But with our schedule being so kind of different this term with all the illness, we've only had it occasionally. But during monk's retreat, we have formal meals in the meditation hall. And besides it being an opportunity just to meditate, I remember one meal we were having. It was breakfast up in the dining hall. And it was just a real beautiful flow to it. When I was actually being still at it. And it's just the, someone passes you the food, put your hands on gusho and gratitude, you pass it on to them. I just remember feeling this really very gentle flow as we were all just being still there and accepting the food with gratitude instead of just being totally unaware of what we were doing and just grabbing the food and, flushing it off. It can be a real ceremony, and that's what it's called. And for the lay people who are in residence here, you can make your formal meals that you have be a real ceremony by just being present there and using it as another opportunity to train. So the formal meal starts off with the Lord Buddha was born in Kapilavastu, enlightened in Magadha, taught in Varanasi, died in Kushinagara. As we spread the vessels of the Lord, we pray that they who eat, the things that are eaten, and the actual eating shall be universally void of self. And this last sentence kind of relates to what I read at first, but I don't know how to explain it. I find for myself You know, we start the ceremony, and then when I get to that, it goes, oh, yes. Something in me goes, oh, yes, this is what I'm trying to do here. I'm trying to let go of the self. And then, I haven't seen this, but it says in here, then you are one with the food that you're eating. And it's all part of the flow of the Buddha nature. And then it's recited, we take refuge in the Buddha, the completely perfect scriptures, the saints and bodhisattvas whose merit is beyond all understanding. And going through this, I was amazed. I've read this so many times and I never really listened to it. It's basically saying we take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. This is what we take refuge in. We let go of the self. We don't take refuge in the food or our thoughts. We take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And then various aspects of the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha are recited. The completely pure Buddha, Vairochana, Buddha, Dharma itself. So when you're doing the mealtime ceremony, I have found also, if I'm not really trying hard, I'm just reciting this as I'm passing the food, and I'm really not listening to it. I'm just really concentrating on getting the food passed and taking what I need. But it can be a real opportunity to listen to the teaching as food is being passed. And the way to listen to this is the same way that we listen to Dharma talks, listen to the morning service scriptures, this is the way we read spiritual reading. It's with the mind of meditation, and not with trying to understand it with the brain, but just listening to it, letting it sink in. And this can all help us with our practice. In the beginning, the mallet will strike the Buddha on the foot. Later, it will strike him on the head. Having taken refuge in the three treasures, all will be able to grasp them perfectly. The way I've seen this is that, I was listening to Reverend Daishin's. He did a talk on the mealtime ceremony. And I was listening to part of it yesterday, and actually what he said explains it better than my own understanding of it, which is, in the beginning the mallet will strike the Buddha on the foot. It somehow, we kind of stumble into the practice, and we kind of, you know, maybe kind of stub our toe on it, and we become aware that there's something there. Later it will strike him on the head. And to me this has always meant a deeper understanding. Having taken refuge in the three treasures, all will be able to grasp them perfectly. So this whole thing is kind of a flow if you listen to it. At first we let go of the self, we take refuge in the three treasures, we do the practice, and we're able to understand with our hearts. You know, perhaps at the beginning we're able to understand something with our heads, with our minds, and later it goes deeper and we understand it with our hearts. The 10 benefits bless the breakfast gruel, and all trainees profit greatly thereby. Since the results thereof are limitless and wonderful, pleasure is ours for eternity. The 10 benefits received from food. They are physical strength, substance, long life, pleasure, maintenance of training, cleansing of the body, settling of the mind, satisfaction of hunger, satisfaction of thirst, and improvement of health. So those are the 4 benefits. I think the pleasure is ours for eternity, again, is when food is taken, when the attitude towards food is kind of in its proper place, I know that's not a sentence that makes a lot of sense, but then we enjoy these benefits. You know, food does help us, it nourishes us, it's enjoyable, it helps us to continue being alive, and pleasure is ours for eternity. It helps us because it keeps us alive, it nourishes us, it helps us to find enlightenment, it helps us to know the truth. And then the two kinds of alms, material and spiritual, have the endowment of boundless merit. Now that they have been fulfilled in this act of charity, both self and others gain pleasure therefrom. And in, I believe it's in Zenda's Eternal Life, it's either in that or the priest's book, where it says that this is done in gratitude. This is this verse is in gratitude for the donors who have offered food, the cabbages and the like that have given their lives so that we can eat, the kitchen people who have spent all this time preparing this pure food for us. So this is just showing gratitude. And then we come to, we will first share the merits of this food with the three treasures of the Dharma. And this is the offering we make to all beings, that our training is not just for ourselves, but it's for self and other. And we share the merits of this meal, the food that we receive, so that we are nourished and we can go on training, meditation that we're doing during this meal. We share it with Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Second, we share it with the four benefactors, the Buddha, the president, our parents, and all people. Because, you know, the Buddha is obvious, the president, because this land is at peace, relatively speaking. Our parents who gave us life, and all people. Third, we will share it with the six lokas. I looked up lokas, and lokas is worlds. So we share it with beings in all the six worlds, in the hells, in the heavens, in the world of the hungry ghosts, the world of the animals, the world of the Titan Asuras, the human world. We share it with all beings, in other words. With all of these, we share it until we make offering thereof. The first bite is to discard all evil, and that is the first of the three pure precepts, cease from evil. The second bite is so that we may train in perfection, do only good. The third bite is to help all beings, do good for others. So you can see the whole, you know, so much of the teaching of Buddhism is in this mealtime ceremony. And so if you listen to it, it helps you take your mind off greed and put your mind in the mind of meditation and accept this teaching. We pray that all may be enlightened. We must think deeply of the ways and means by which this food has come. We must consider our merit when accepting it, which I've spoken of. We must protect ourselves from error by excluding greed from our mind. This, I find this sentence has always just really hit me, because when greed in any form is in the ascendancy, we cannot do what is really right to do. And does that make sense? I don't have to explain it. Okay. You know, I found for myself that many times greed has ruled, you know, not with food necessarily, but in some other thing I've really wanted, you know, just wanting to be with someone. Just, you know, it comes up, and you all are aware of it, comes up in all kinds of ways, and then we can't see clearly what is really good to do. And I am finding finding for myself, and it's actually very difficult, is that we have to give up everything. We have to give up all greens, absolutely all greens. And that is not easy. And just be willing to do what's in our hearts. And that is the ongoing practice. This is what we're working on as we go on and on in our practice of learning to let go of greed, learning to do what's in our heart. And again, I know for myself, when I give in to greed, it's just the results are painful to some degree or other. We will eat lest we become lean and die. That is our. And this is also pointing to, I believe, to that we don't allow ourselves to become lean and die. There are some practices where some religious groups have not wanted to cause any harm whatsoever, and so they stopped eating, and they died, basically. Irvin Master Jihyu says that it causes greater harm to grow lean and die. That is a greater, I don't want to use the word sin, but sin wants to come up because we don't believe in sin. But it's the greater something than eating what we need in order to live and eating nourishing food in order to live. The Buddha learned that. He became lean and he almost died. And he found that didn't help anyone. And what if he had just, allowed himself to die? Who knows if there would have been another Buddha who came along to spread this teaching. There probably would have. But by eating and nourishing the body and eating good foods, and sometimes nourishing the spirit and having our ice cream and chocolate sauce, we help ourselves and we can help others. We accept this food so that we may become enlightened. That is our purpose for eating. So it's the middle way. We nourish the body, but we try not to eat from greed, and we work on it. And then the final verse that we say at the end of the mealtime ceremony is, the universe is as the boundless sky, as lotus blossoms above unclean water. Pure and beyond the world is the Buddha nature of the trainee. O holy Buddha, we take refuge in you. And this to me is another reminder. It's another kind of help. It's something that helps me with my training to hear that and to listen to it. I think that's all I have to say. So, does anybody have any questions?